Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Weekly Scoop. Today we have as a guest Paul Cochrane, the Irish journalist and political analyst. Hello and welcome.
Thank you.
We are going to dig deep into those articles that we have for today. We have articles from New York Times and another one from Al Akhbar English, the Lebanese newspaper. But before we do that, we are going to a short report shedding the light on the highlights of the weeks. This week's headlines starts with the New York Times. Power vacuum in Middle East lifts militants. Kerry opens door to Iran's participation in Syria peace talks. Secretary of State John Kerry suggested on Sunday that Iran might play a role at the peace talks on Syria that are scheduled to take place later this month. Qaeda-linked militants in Iraq secure nearly full control of Fallujah. Sunni militants fighting under the banner of Al-Qaeda appeared to make gains across Anbar province on Saturday, using snipers and rocket-propelled grenades in heavy street fighting as they secured nearly full control of Fallujah and captured the strategic town of Kerma. Government forces and tribal militias fighting with them seemed unable to resist the militants' advances. And now we move to Al-Bawaba website. Al-Qaeda-linked rebel group pulls out of northern Syria strongholds. Iraqi forces prepare to attack Al-Qaeda-controlled Fallujah, 20 killed in Baghdad bombings. Egypt police outpost attacks north of Cairo. Sectarian clashes in Yemen's north leave at least 23 dead in 2 days. And now to Press TV website. Syria opposition living their last days. Foreign-backed militants fighting the government of Syria and President Bashar al-Assad are living their last days, analyst tells the Press TV. Assad supporters' opponents clash in Lebanon's Tripoli. Fresh clashes have erupted between supporters and opponents of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in the Lebanese city of Tripoli. Kerry says Iran could be helpful on Syria during Geneva 2 conference. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has announced that the Islamic Republic of Iran could be helpful even on the sidelines of a second round of Geneva talks on Syria. And now let's check the Lebanese newspaper Al Akhbar. Lebanon, March 14, upset as Sulaiman backs down. Dahiya residents blame Saudi for recent bombing. Lebanese army captures emir behind Iran embassy attack. Lebanon back to breaking bones in Tripoli. Netanyahu accuses Palestinians of inciting hatred. Kerry, U.S. to help Iraq fight Al-Qaeda. Qaeda-linked ISIS claims Beirut suicide blast. And to the Turkish website, today's Zaman. Turkey intensifies contacts with Lebanon amid regional turmoil. Chaos rhetoric hits Turkish-American relations. Since the start of a major probe into allegations of corruption and bribery that began with a wave of detentions on December 17th, remarks made by Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, other Turkish politicians and the pro-government media have accused the U.S. of trying to create chaos in Turkey, taking a toll on the future of Turkish-American relations. Erdogan's threats of economic fragility, a dangerous tactic. Paul, we saw at the end of the report something about the Turkish-US relationships. Today we are going to speak about the Saudi-US relationships. After all what's going on in the Middle East and Syria and what's happening and the Iranian deal that Saudi Arabia was a lot upset about it, how do you assess the US-Saudi relationships now?
Well, I think it's on a sort of backward step, really. I mean, relations between Saudi and the US have often been strained at times, certainly over major military issues or geostrategic issues. But in general, they've walked together in lockstep. They have mm-hmm. similar interests. They have similar economic and political interests in the region. The US has often pushed for Saudi to do certain things, and Saudi's been the bankroller or the one mm-hmm. acting as the intermediary on the ground between local forces and so forth. But on the Iran issue, I mean, they came directly at loggerheads. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia did not want any form of a deal with Iran, and the US realized the changing winds in the world and in the region that this has to happen. Mm-hmm. And Saudis really, and Israel, are the only ones that really are not going to benefit from this. But I do think, though, to a large degree, that this rift, this division that's going on between Saudi and the United States is a bit overemphasized in mm-hmm. a way. It's a bit exaggerated. Because at the heart of it, I mean, it's money and mm-hmm. oil and economic relations, and they're still extremely strong. Hundreds of billions of dollars flow out of the Saudi Arabia every year, and they end up primarily mm-hmm. in banks in the United mm-hmm. States, major investments in the United States, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. United States invests in Saudi Arabia. There's a lot of military contracts. There's a lot of oil investments mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. not just from American companies, but in refineries to expertise, etc. Mm-hmm. So those things are not broken off easily. And Saudi is a huge, huge economy.
They have good ties. They always had good ties between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. But now we're seeing that Iran and the U.S. have common interests in the region as well, not only U.S. and Saudi Arabia. So now doesn't the Iranian-U.S. relationship change the situation between Saudis and Americans now?
I think it will, but I mean, it's going to take a long time for sort mm-hmm. of, you know, the ice to melt, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's relations between the United States and Tehran were broken off since 79. I mm-hmm. mean, that's a long time to suddenly change. Mm-hmm. Things are moving in a very positive direction in many ways.
But they've moved fast.
And they have moved very fast.
After the elections of the Sheikh Hassan Rouhani to presidency in Iran, we've seen a phone call, the first phone call after the
Indeed.
Islamic Revolution in Iran between an American president and an Iranian president. And afterwards, we've seen the deal. We've seen the removing the sanctions against Iran.
Gradually, and not
putting more sanctions on Iran. So this was a fast step. Those are fast mm. steps in a year. It all happened during this year.
Indeed,
this
I mean, there's also members of the U.S. Senate, though, that are still actually trying to push for the sanctions to mm-hmm. to stay, if not put harder mm-hmm. sanctions.
Yeah, some of them.
You still have a lot of divisions there. It's mm-hmm. not going to be a walk across a field. There's mm-hmm. going to be a lot of issues still at play. But I think this is the door is slowly opening here, mm-hmm. and that is very positive. But for Iran to take the place of Saudi Arabia as a major Middle Eastern partner, mm-hmm. I mean, that's mm-hmm. going to take decades, probably.
Okay.
It's not going to change, I think, overnight anytime soon. Saudi is someone that the United States have been dealing with and dealing with very closely. Mm-hmm. They know each other and the Gulf, and there is a lot of trust that mm-hmm. that's still there.
Isn't it still there after the Syrian unrest and after the failure of Saudi Arabia to commit to its goals in Syria?
Well, there you get on Saudi foreign policy, which often differed from U.S. goals. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think covert operations mm-hmm. or operations that the Saudis do from financing terrorism mm-hmm. to actually direct involvement in it, the U.S. is probably not always involved in that or doesn't always know what the Saudis are doing or mm-hmm. approve of it, but it can't necessarily bring the Saudis always to the table mm-hmm. over this, or we know what you've done, we don't like that, but mm-hmm. you know, we still have these bigger interests in shape there. I mean, I think it could be very interesting to see what might happen in Russia with the Winter Olympics. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Saudis did, Bandar allegedly did threaten Putin that over the Syria issue.
And we've seen the explosions that took place in Russia, the two explosions, they were not expected, and this is something new for Russians, and President Putin have said that we are going to fight terrorism, and it is his main goal right now. We are going to speak about this, and now we're going to discuss an article in the New York Times that was published on January 6th, and it says that US and Iran face common enemies in Mideast strife. This was the title of it. And it says, while the two governments quickly continue to pursue their often conflicting interests, they are being drawn together by their mutual opposition to an international movement of young Sunni fighters who, with their pickups, trucks and Kalashnikovs, are raising the black flag of Al-Qaeda along sectarian fault lines in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Afghanistan and Yemen. We've always seen the US saying that it is against terrorism and it is fighting Al-Qaeda, but we've seen also the US helping and funding armed groups in Syria. So why now does the US want to fight armed groups in Syria? At the first, it was funding them and helping them.
It's kind of like the sort of the Frankenstein, right? Mm-hmm. You create movements or help push them, and then they get out of your control. Mm-hmm. And people not learning from history at all. I mean, we saw that in Afghanistan in the mm-hmm. 1980s, the US working with Saudi intelligence that led to like Al-Qaeda and other groups, and that later came and bit the hand that fed them.
And we've seen that in Iraq as well.
We saw that in Iraq, mm-hmm. and we're seeing that again in Syria. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can be very cynical that they're doing this on purpose to create instability, mm-hmm. which is a factor. But it's also, I think, that they thought that they could control certain movements mm-hmm. and push certain movements, a general opposition that was not Islamicized or as militant. And then these militant groups that came up, and they thought, well, these guys are the ones who are actually going to fight and fight hard, so we should support them. Mm-hmm. But then they get out of control. And there you have, I mean, the Qatari and the Saudis' role in this, I think, is they're the middlemen, the intermediary mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. deals with these groups.
Between the foreign countries and the Syria.
So
or
indirectly,
the militants.
Mm-hmm. But it's come, the Americans, I mean, from talking to people in DC too, on high level, mm-hmm. the Americans have said that, you know, that they are screwed there. They don't know what's going on and they let things get out of control. But it is very interesting that you have these commonalities between mm-hmm. between Iran and the US and with Russia and also China in this sense. Mm-hmm. The enemy primarily should have been for the United States or the West, primarily Sunni mm-hmm. terrorism, Sunni fundamentalism, not Shia Iran mm-hmm. fundamentalism or from Iran at all. If we talk of Islamic terrorism, it is Sunni Islamic terrorism, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm.
And this is what the article said. They are young Sunni fighters, so maybe it did not name them as Salafists or jihadists, but they are jihadists. They are people who come for jihad in Syria. Mm-hmm. You said something about creating chaos or instability in the region. Why would the US want to create instability in this region in particular when we have Israel at the borders with Syria and Israel wants stability in its country to maintain the negotiations with the Palestinians, to have a peace talk with the Palestinians and get done with the war between Palestinians and war between the resistance, whether it's the Lebanese resistance as in Hezbollah or the resistance resistance in Syria or the Syrian government helping the resistance or the Palestinian resistance. Why create instability in Syria now?
Instability suits quite a lot of certain interests, for sure. I'm reminded of the Mossad, mm-hmm. the Israeli Secret Services slogan, which is by way of deception. Mm-hmm. The Israelis like chaos and instability because they like to keep enemies within the Middle East, mm-hmm. Arab fighting Arab, rather mm-hmm. than fighting mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. It deflects the attention away and creates that instability. It was perfect in the 80s between Iran and Iraq.
So we create sectarian wars so that they do not unite their efforts and fight against
divide
us.
Divide and rule.
Okay.
Yeah,
this is what always happens.
And so I think this chaos, I mean, it suits the financial markets to certain degrees. Mm-hmm. It suits oil producers because it keeps the oil prices mm-hmm. high and other aspects of instability. The weapons industry gets to sell more, the security mm-hmm. industry gets to sell more. It's obviously terrible for millions and millions of people, for everyday people, but for different people and businesses and politics, it's actually very
they
beneficial.
They benefit from this.
What that end goal is, mm-hmm. is a big question mark. Mm-hmm. One would think, why on earth does anyone want chaos or instability? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it does suit certain agendas. And it's going to create, I mean, it is already creating massive problems within Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the big question is do the outside powers want Lebanon to remain stable or not?
I don't think so, because we've seen the explosions that are taking place in Lebanon, and kind of we know who's behind it. And we have an article here talking about Majid al-Majid, who is supposed to be a Saudi Arabian officer and the Saudi Arabian intelligence officer, who have been caught in Lebanon and who have been behind a lot of terrorist attacks in Lebanon. So if Saudi Arabia was behind Majid al-Majid, we still don't know. Investigations still did not reveal if Saudi Arabia was behind him, which means who's behind Saudi Arabia? It's foreign countries. So it's all related and in connection. We can continue. I just need to read this in the article that we were discussing. The United States reluctant to intervene in a bloody and conclusive conflict is seeing its regional influence decline, while Iraq, which cost the Americans $1 trillion and more than 4,000 lives, is growing increasingly unstable. So now we have Iraq unstable as well, Syria unstable, Lebanon is on its way to instability, and of course it's not only on its way, it's unstable. People like the Kuwaiti government is calling for its residents to leave Lebanon, everyone is calling for its citizens to leave Lebanon. We don't have stability in the whole region. Why is the US benefiting from this?
As I was saying earlier, I mean, to the sense of, I mean, you can retain your control, you can retain your power, and economic aspects. And the Middle East has long been divided and ruled that way, and keeping issues and fires going for conflicts to retain these issues. And that allows other areas of the world to actually to grow or to do better in that sense.
It's not only the Middle East, it's not only this region. We also have Egypt, we have Yemen is not stable, North Africa, it's all of the countries that witnessed uprisings, they're not stable. We're going to move now to our second article in New York Times, and it says Saudi's grants to Lebanon is seen as a message to the U.S. So now Saudi Arabia is sending messages to the U.S. through Lebanon. It says that the Saudi aid package nearly twice Lebanon's $1.7 billion annual defense budget, so it is twice, it's $3 billion approximately, is earmarked to buy French arms and is unlikely to give the army what it needs most, say supporters and opponents of Hezbollah. This is what supporters and opponents of Hezbollah agree on. So this is going to be given to the Lebanese army for support. And there's something here said by analysts that both sides agree that if Lebanon's government under Saudi pressure was pushed the army to confront Hezbollah, it would risk fracturing the force along political parties. So do you think that Saudi Arabia is giving this aid to control the Lebanese government or to help form a Lebanese government of March 14 alliance only?
Yeah, I think it's both. It's definitely a factor. It's showing we have the money and we're willing to step in and help when necessary. I mean, they did the same with, what, $2 billion for the central bank in July 2006 war. It was exactly the same. We're there to stabilize the lira and Lebanon's economy. And this has a similar effect. It's very interesting that it's going to be for French weapons.
But in 2006, it did not work because they created a government, and March 14 were very happy about it. But then again, the March 8 did not accept the fact that one color government is going to be formed, and did not work. Why would it work now with the whole Hezbollah issue being Hezbollah working in Syria and Hezbollah being effective in Syria?
And then the fact that there's been no elections either. It's a very complex situation, clearly, but it's Saudi showing, we see that the army needs to be supported. We want the money there, and we want you to know that the money's from us, and so that they can pull certain strings. And I think they would obviously love to have March 14th back in power rather than March 8th. Many of the March 14th politicians were backed or financed by Saudi to a degree. But then, of course, the prime minister's position always is essentially financed and backed by Saudi Arabia. So it doesn't make a huge amount of difference whether it's March 8th or March 14th for the prime minister side. But this is what I think is also interesting about this is it's French weapons. I mean, Saudi did a huge deal in Saudi with France, with Hollande, for French weapons, and now it's the same. And France was the old colonial power here.
It is also a gift for France.
It's not only a gift
for Lebanon.
Because they get the money.
It's Saudi Arabia trying to, is it that it's trying to get the okay of France on Syria? Like, we are going to make this deal go through you, and we are going to give that grant and aid for you, you French, but at the same time, you are going to help us win the Syrian
Definitely.
Issue.
So I mean, it was France was for the full military intervention in Syria, whereas the US side, it didn't happen. Britain, it was voted against, but France was for it very much. And there, they have a clear commonality there with the Saudis on this, and the French were also used. And by themselves also to try and stop some of the aspects of the talks on Iran. The French were one of the ones making the biggest criticisms or big issues, far more than the United States even was. The French are playing a strange game in the region right now, but they're very much backing up with Saudi, and that's to do with their own bad economic situation as well, I think. You know.
But I want to know something. Why did the editor choose that in particular title, that Saudi's grant to Lebanon is seen as a message to the U.S.? Is it really a message to the U.S.? And what message could be sent to the U.S. through this grant?
Well, I think the message is that, you know, we have the money and we're going to do it and give something, whereas the Americans have been giving to the Lebanese military for years, but it's small amounts. I mean, it would be 10, 20 million, 100 million, I think, at one point for buying certain things. But not 3 billion, that's a lot. They provided training, things like that, but it's not the same. It'll be interesting to see when this money comes in and how it comes in, and whether 1 billion at a time or how much. But it's a message, yeah, on that front, that we are backing Lebanon and we're going in there. Supporting militarily,
well,
supporting economically.
Well, strong in Lebanon. This is a message.
This is a very much statement. And it's got a clear reference to Syria. And at a time when the US policy has been flip-flopping on how to really handle the Middle East and to do things. I mean, Iran is the biggest sort of progress and breakthrough the Obama administration has had. Everywhere else, it's left with its tail between its legs in many cases. Egypt handled the situation terribly. In Tunisia, it didn't handle it well. Bahrain, it didn't say anything for or against, or it just sort of sat back quietly. Syria, it's not been had a clear policy, and it's playing into the hands of Sunni militants and then indirectly into Saudi's hands.
Okay, if we want to wrap it up and if we want a conclusion to what's going to happen in the region, whether in Lebanon, Syria, or Iraq, in this region, isn't going to calm down? Is the unrest in Syria going to end anytime soon, in your opinion?
I think on Syria, we're maybe looking at a sort of Afghanistan and the Mediterranean. I think these Geneva talks are probably not going to succeed. The situation's going to continue like this for years to come with different groups. Fighting, and it's going to get nasty, similar to how Iraq is today, with what, 30,000 killed last year. I think we're going to maybe see an increase in Sunni-Shia
conflict
and fighting,
war.
Which is being pushed externally and is developing, and that could get very nasty. But I think a lot will hinge on the deal with Iran and how things go there. And if that goes very well, that could be a very positive wave within the region and lead to some good positive developments. But for me, yeah, it will also hinge on what happens in Saudi as well. That has a direct impact on all the other countries that have been involved in uprisings over the last few years. And the situation in Turkey as well, as that spills over into everything too. So.
And I think an uprising is going to take place soon in Turkey after the whole corruption issue that was rising in Turkey.
And links to Saudi there again, right?
Of course, it's a Saudi issue, it's a Saudi thingy. Thank you so much for being in our show, Paul Cochran. And thank you so much for the information that you gave us about those subjects. We will have you as a guest a lot more to have your expertise. Dear viewers, our time is up. Thank you for watching.